And I think there are so many more opportunities and so much more wiggle room to create a career that you care about or do something that actually makes you feel good, without necessarily, giving up financial stability or, a reasonable life path. And so I think so often we see, for my friend groups, it can be, finance or consulting or like the holy grails of everything. And then people get there and they're miserable. But there's so many more conversations, so many more interesting groups and people that are doing things. Sometimes it just takes a little bit more work to find.
Welcome back to Paths to Purpose. Thanks again for joining us. Today, we are back with a new guest who is still in college, but has already started her career as a human rights activist. But before we get started with her interview, we have a few little housekeeping items that we wanted to touch on. First, we did put up a gap analysis over on our Instagram page, a visual guide to what we talked about last week. This is kind of the place where we're going to be posting a lot of resources related to the topics that we cover on the podcast. So if you want to go and check that out, again, our Instagram is Paths to Purpose Pod, number two, Purpose Pod. And the second thing is feedback. We've been getting a lot of feedback from people from just various places, emails, Instagram messages, personal messages that we have lots of things that are working for people and things that are still confusing and things that we need to work on as hosts too. And we just wanted to say that we really appreciate when people take the time and kind of share with us, what's resonating and what's not, and kind of where things are working and where they need improvement. And we just wanted to say thank you for that. Thank you for taking the time and to keep it coming and, let us know how we're doing with this. Alan, is there anything else that you wanted to touch on before we get started with our interview today?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I deeply appreciate the guests we've had and their willingness to share their stories and their vulnerability. There's themes that we're hearing kind of reoccur. And some of it, admittedly, we're asking them about, like dealing with imposter syndrome and things like that. And I think the reason why we're doing that is we're trying to communicate to everybody that we all as human beings deal with this stuff. And it's really nice to hear their different approaches to how they deal with the noise in their heads and the noise from the outside and how they find their own path and kind of create the opportunities. So I really appreciate the input we've gotten from our guests and the time they've committed.
Yeah, I think we've been really, really lucky to have kind of the people that we started with this podcast, because they've all been really authentic and vulnerable, and doing that publicly can sometimes be really hard. So yeah, I want to echo Alan's message there. And without further ado, we will get started with our guest this week. We are very excited to host a new guest this week. We have Avery McCall with us. Avery is currently an undergraduate student at Stanford and a Mayfield Fellow at Stanford Technology Ventures Program. She also has experience as a summer analyst at 1843 Capital and was both a model with Ford Modeling Agency and a radio show co-host for the State of Women Radio Network. Avery, welcome to Paths to Purpose, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be with you guys.
So excited to have you. Can you kind of start by sharing more about what you do currently and kind of your path to getting there?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, I'm currently an undergrad at Stanford, where I'm studying international relations. And I'm also a Mayfield Fellow, which is a 9-month program where 12 Stanford students are selected for a fellowship in entrepreneurial leadership in technology. So it kind of sounds a little bit bizarre to have international relations and a technology fellowship side by side. But I think it kind of makes sense for me, at least. I've taken a fairly unconventional path through life, and it zigged and zagged quite a bit. But I feel like each of the decisions I've made has really been driven by a desire to understand the inequalities that exist in the world and try to find some way to create solutions to address them or equip myself with the tools to be able to make change. And so that's looked fairly different at different stages of my life. I first kind of got interested in human rights when I was, I think, around 12. I read the book Half the Sky by Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wudunn, and that just exploded my conception of the world. I lived a very sheltered and privileged life on the North Shore of Chicago, and just had no idea really what was happening in the world, and felt like the only reason I was sitting where I was and not, you know, married at age 12 or experiencing sex traffic or other, you know, horrific things, was just because I got lucky. So I really felt a responsibility to do something with that luck. So I served as a teen advisor to the UN Foundation's Girl Up campaign, and really felt like I found the power of my voice in that program and really wanted to help others find theirs and wanted to figure out how to expand my platform to do that. So I've always been pretty tall and skinny my whole life and had a lot of people tell me I should model. So I pursued modeling as a platform for that human rights work and to really try to get other young women sort of interested and involved, really just in any issues that they care about, and to recognize that they have a voice. And as I was in that program, or it wasn't even a program, while I was in that career, I really started to see the impact that technology can make in amplifying causes and amplifying voices. So then I spent some time working at Instagram just to kind of see how the inner mechanisms were working there. Spent some time, like you said, doing a radio show to just kind of talk to people, see what their careers were like as I was trying to figure out what I wanted to be doing. And then as I got to Stanford, I think a lot of Stanford students will experience the same thing where, you know, Silicon Valley, the startup mindset is so intense. And I think for me, it was more seeing sort of the scale and the impact that these companies could have on issues that certainly impacted people's lives, but their end game was really to churn out profit. So my goal really became kind of understanding how those tools, that entrepreneurial mindset, that technology can be used to make some change on these other issues that I was interested in. So that's kind of how I've ended up at this dual setup of studying international relations, trying to understand sort of the governmental mechanisms, the humanitarian intervention, the cultures, et cetera, and then also some more of the technology and entrepreneurial tools. So it's been a little all over the place.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you kind of, when you were going through, matching up to what could appear on the surface really unrelated things, when you were finding kind of the purpose and the intersectionalities between those, did you kind of use any tools that helped you along the way, or was it like a really organic process? That helped you find that purpose?
I think it's been kind of a little bit of everything. So I think what really sort of kicked off that whole process, like I said, was reading Half the Sky, and it's been just kind of me following paths where I can. And I think a lot of that has involved, you know, going this way a little bit, learning something, realizing I really didn't like doing that, and kind of making my way back and figuring out what the next path was. But I think for me, a lot of the tools were just conversations, finding people that I thought their work was interesting or something they said was interesting, and trying to reach out to people for informational interviews or just to kind of chat and understand what their process was like. I think a lot of times it can feel really daunting to reach out to people whose careers or whatever you respect, but I think a lot of times they're actually really interested in engaging, and most people love talking about themselves, which I realized you can really leverage. And so I felt like that has been one of my most helpful tools, is really just reaching out to people I thought were interesting. And then from those conversations, asking, you know, do you have a person or two that you feel like based on our conversation would be really helpful for me to connect with? And so that has been really useful for me. And then additionally, I've found, you know, human rights work has been really important for me, particularly working with refugees and resettled refugees. And I found, you know, I've worked kind of on an activism level and policy level, but for me, I think that one of the most impactful and sort of reorienting mechanisms has been working with resettled refugees and just finding opportunities in your own community to talk to people to understand what they're going through. And I think in that way, you can really start to understand the real needs in people's lives and stop kind of making assumptions. So there's a variety of things. And then I guess one last thing would also just be like asking for things that you feel like are out of your reach or that maybe you're unqualified for. And that's definitely become a practice for me. It has not come easily. Yeah. But I think that's been where some of the most interesting experiences for me have shown up, where I've been like, that seems really cool. I feel like I'm 100% not qualified to participate in that, but I'm going to ask anyway. And sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't work out, but sometimes it works out.
So as I'm listening to what you're saying, Avery, one of the things that struck me was that you're listening to yourself a lot and you're kind of going naturally with your own flow. Where do societal pressures and outside influences factor in there? Because I know, having worked with some of the students where you are, there's a lot of expectation for profit, or there's a lot of expectation for financial security, but then there's this conflict that they're wrestling with around what they actually would like to be doing themselves, which may not necessarily align.
Right.
So how did you follow your own self, and what role do other people have in giving you influence there?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is definitely a huge pressure, and certainly not one that I'm immune to. But it's been really, I feel like, a process for me to just, I think very quickly, sort of, if I listen to it, the alarms start going off in my head if I start veering towards a path that does feel inauthentic, or that does, you know, feel like it's not really what I actually care about or what I want to be putting my time and energy towards. And so I think for me, a big part of this process has been, and it's very much an ongoing process, just kind of trying to pay more attention when I feel that sort of discomfort, or like, maybe this isn't what I should be doing. And then I really have, I think, tried to gather people around me who, whether it's professors, whether it's my family, whether it's ex-bosses, et cetera. And I think part of that comes through those informational interviews. But just people, and it can really be anybody who really know you and who you can kind of bounce ideas off of, and can help kind of guide you in one direction or another, and just be like, that doesn't seem like you whatsoever. And I think there are so many more opportunities and so much more wiggle room to create a career that you care about or do something that actually makes you feel good, without necessarily, you know, giving up financial stability or, you know, a reasonable life path. And so I think so often we see, you know, for my friend groups, it can be, you know, finance or consulting or like the holy grails of everything. And then people get there and they're miserable. But there's so many more conversations, so many more interesting groups and people that are doing things. Sometimes it just takes a little bit more work to find. But I think part of it is really just kind of trying to listen when your instinct is telling you something. I think that's really the first step. And then just trying to find people who you can bounce your ideas off of, who can really support you. And then from there, if you even have an inkling of, oh, maybe I want to go in this direction, then just start researching and try and reach out to people, just to get a sense of what the possibilities are. Cause I think that's really the huge first step, is just to see the options that exist.
Yeah. I think everything you just touched on, like, is hitting all these points for us, I think, of just like what we've been trying to convey to our audience about this process. But I wanted to jump in and ask quickly, you've talked a little bit about kind of, it sounds like your support network of people that you mm-hmm. have around you and who you kind of trust and go to give you real authentic feedback or to just bounce ideas around. Kind of, can you maybe talk about what qualities you're looking for, like when you have people in your network that aren't going to push you towards things that they see as secure, or aren't going to just like shove things down your throat, I guess,
right,
that aren't authentic to you as a human?
Absolutely. So I think honestly, part of that is people who are open to different paths. I think that's a big first step, is if somebody else is kind of courageous enough to open their perspective. So I've really tried to find people who, you know, are even further along in the careers and open their mindset a little bit more. That's kind of helpful to be like, okay, I'll be okay. I can make it through this. So I think, you know, what comes to mind is I've had a professor who I took a class with him back in high school. So he really sort of understood, has been with me for a while, understood a lot of sort of my growth and my evolution. And so he's been a really phenomenal sounding board for me as I've tried to navigate everything, and is very much, you know, non-prescriptive and is not trying to, I think what's really important is finding people who aren't trying to kind of steer their life, but who are there to offer you advice, offer you guidance, and then let you do what you need to do. If that means making mistakes, then that means making mistakes. Yeah. But I think sometimes it can get difficult when somebody is kind of trying to strong arm their vision of your life onto you. And then you're suddenly like, oh man, this is not what I wanted. So I think really trying to, I think you can really get an instinct for how well you click with someone pretty pretty quickly. And so finding people who you feel comfortable with, who seem to understand where you're coming from and what drives you, and then who are willing to see more options, willing to support your exploring and recognize that, you know, you'll figure it out, but here's some suggestions if you want to take them, I guess.
What I find really compelling about what you said is you're looking inside for guidance, and a lot of the people your age tend to look outside for guidance. And that's really interesting to me, because I see, you know, when you're talking about a lot of your friends or your cohort, I see a lot of people, they don't know how to read their own self. Mm. Like, they don't understand, what am I feeling? And so how did you do that process? How did you get to the point where you would listen primarily to yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, I mean, I'm definitely an introverted person. So I think my disposition has been more reflective and internal my whole life. But I think honestly, it's come from a lot of struggle in times where I haven't listened to myself and kind of being forced onto that path. So I think really in high school, I put a lot of pressure on myself. I was, you know, I did an online program through Stanford for high school. So I was at an extremely intense online school, which now everybody is familiar with that process. I was, you know, internationally modeling. I felt like I had this responsibility to save the world and be the perfect person and blah, 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 blah. And that really led to a lot of pretty intense anxiety kind of towards the end of my junior year, start of my senior year. And it just kind of got to the point where I was like, this may be what I want to do, but this is not sustainable. And this is not how I can be doing it. So I really got into like mindfulness that summer. I found this Buddhist monk happened to be living near me. And so I spent a few sessions just studying with him, trying to understand some principles of mindfulness, of really trying to sort of let go those external expectations, et cetera, meditate. It wasn't certainly a one-stop shop fix all the problems, but it was a really good start. And so that I feel like kind of started that process for me. And then, you know, there were times where then I would kick back into that kind of worry mode, thinking about what everyone else is doing. And once again, you know, it might have been 2 days, might have been a couple weeks, then I was suddenly like, this is just not how I want to live. And then kind of coming back. So it's been a lot of just coming back to that process, and slowly that foundation has built. And also a big shift about 2 years ago, I got super sick. I got diagnosed with Lyme disease and two malaria-like co-infections of Lyme disease. So going from being a, you know, top student at Stanford, varsity athlete, using my body, using my brain all the time, I was suddenly in bed 20 hours a day and couldn't string together coherent sentences. And so I really felt like, you know, I had valued myself, I guess, through my mind, my intellect, my body, my ability to get things done. And suddenly I couldn't do any of those things. So I had to figure out what exactly I wanted to value and how I wanted to view life. And also I think it helped me see how unsustainable how I had been operating was, even though I felt like I had made huge strides. So I think that was definitely another kind of knock me on the ground, and then kind of having to rebuild, figure out how I wanted to reapproach life. So it's definitely been, you know, it's not like, oh, one day I wake up and it's a flower garden. I wish, oh, I can, you know, tune into my center and everything's beautiful. But I think a lot of that self-understanding does come from when you don't do it. And then you're like, oh, that was a mistake.
That is just so fascinating to me. And that was kind of one question that I had for you as someone who has been in such like a public facing job, like being a model internationally and having people kind of assess your performance, literally, of just like being a runway model and doing all mm-hmm. these things. How has that kind of changed, or has it changed any of your thoughts on like where you see yourself as a person, or like how do you process all that pressure that, like, I know you just talked about it a little bit of like the mindfulness, but like
right.
I feel like that's something that girls are under naturally, is like the way that we look and the way we externally present ourselves to the world seems to be really highly valued, like as a societal thing, but you are literally a model. And how have you kind of dealt with that? Like, that is something that seems so anxiety inducing to me in and of itself.
Yeah. I mean, there were definitely times where it did get a little bit stressful, but I feel like for me, at least when I was modeling, I felt like it was really helpful that I was doing that for another reason. You know, I was doing that to use it as a platform for human rights work. And so I felt like there was another thing that was my value and that I valued going into that, versus just trying to get, you know, the pretty pictures, et cetera. So I feel like I was really able to know that, you know, I felt more connected to my mind than my body. And I think that was one of the, you know, unrelated to the pressures of that, I think that was one of the really interesting things about getting sick, is even though so much is going wrong with my body, I think it's really helped me appreciate how miraculous our bodies are. Like, it's so cool how much stuff our bodies can do. And so really trying to appreciate the fact that our bodies are miraculous, they're amazing, and really trying to rely on that. And then I think also, like, I kind of, I don't know if I mentioned this before or not, but I think it's been really important for me to determine whose opinion I actually care about. And I think that's really hard to do. And it's definitely still something that I struggle with, but recognizing that if I'm myself, if I'm, you know, doing what I need to be doing, the people that deserve to be in my life and whose opinions I should care about are going to support me. And everybody is thinking about themselves. And I think most of the time when somebody criticizes you, it's because it's coming from a place of insecurity. So I think that's been an important process for me to try to remember, is especially that when someone's criticizing you, it's usually coming from a place of insecurity, has been really helpful. And then really just kind of relying on whose opinions I care about. And then I think lastly, for a while, I think I felt a lot of responsibility to like change everything, and I had to do everything perfectly right away. And something my mom always tells me is, you just one life at a time. You never know the impact that changing one person's life will have. And if you're just trying to focus on, you know, every interaction you have or everything you do, if you're just kind of changing one person's mindset by a little bit, if you're just giving somebody, you know, a little bit more opportunity to fulfill their potential, then that's all you need to do. So I think kind of bringing the scale down has also been really important.
That's a beautiful statement for so many reasons. But I wanted to ask, because a lot of people are constantly, so when they're sitting with insecurity, they're constantly looking outside for input. And yet you've got a process by which you source, because you're following your own instincts and you're getting input. But so many people are looking for stability when they're doing that, and you're looking for learning. Is that how to describe your process? Or
that's how I try to orient my process, definitely. I think I'm a very type A person. I like having certainty. So trying to embrace uncertainty, I think, has been one of the great challenges and opportunities of my life. And really, it has been where I feel like my greatest opportunities have come from. But I think one of the things that I've really been trying to work on is valuing not knowing things and making sure that I have an opportunity to learn. Because if you try to go around pretending like, oh, I know everything, I've got it down, you can't teach me anything, like I've got this perfect facade, I'm good to go, then you don't grow, then you don't learn, then you can't figure out all these sort of intersecting patterns, I guess. And so I think the opportunity to learn is one that is sometimes undervalued in our society, when everybody wants that final product, when everyone wants that, you know, you've gotten there, you don't have anything to learn, you're just contributing. And so really trying to you know, share my experiences, contribute where I can, but also figure out what I'm just interested in, what I want to learn more about, and experimenting and exploring without a little bit more. And I think that does lead to better opportunities. And time again, every time I've done that or taken a bit of a risk or done something where I felt completely underqualified for, usually A, it hasn't turned out that badly. And B, the opportunity that came as a result of it has been astronomical. So really, I think definitely trying to lean into that discomfort, which is very uncomfortable for me, and embrace that learning process a little bit more.
Yeah, just one of the things I want to wrap up my thinking on that particular issue is one of the things that I see a lot of is looking to people we know in comfort for advice, but you're actually looking outside to people you can learn from for advice. And I find that really, really compelling. I think that's really interesting because a lot of the people we look for comfort from parents or friends, they don't understand us that well. Mm-hmm. And so their advice is clouded by their own perspective. And it's easier and more interesting sometimes to look outside to people who could be mentors who aren't yet, who don't really know you for input. And that's sort of what I think I heard you saying.
Right. And I think also in that process, I've definitely had times where I've reached out to people and they have given me advice. And then I've gotten really stressed out about that advice because it seemed like it, in theory, sounded like really good advice and would make somebody fairly successful, but it just didn't feel like me. So I think on the one hand, definitely exploring, reaching out to people who are outside of your network, outside of your comfort zone, but also trying to discern again, whether you feel like that person, even if they're challenging you, whether they kind of understand where you're coming from. And then also not having to take all of their advice and listening to whether it actually feels like it's the right advice or guidance for you.
Yeah, I think that is something that I've had to learn a lot of in my young adulthood. Just hearing you say all this, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. Because it's almost just learning to say no. You know, even if, especially if people give you unsolicited advice, because that happens a lot too when you're young. And it's just, you know, people with well-intending, you know, they want the best for you in a lot of ways, but it comes from, you know, a good-hearted assumption that they have about you or the things that you might want. And it's really hard to say no to people that care about you, or that, you know, intrinsically, you know, have this love for you that you don't want to diminish in not taking their advice. But that is something that has been so valuable for my journey too, as a young person, and just, you know, whether it's, yeah, friends, family, mentors, sometimes, you know, whatever it is, is like being true to yourself and following that first.
I've also seen projection of their own insecurities in their advice.
Yes. So,
I'm concerned about your financial security, therefore you should go down this financially secure path because it's my insecurity that I'm projecting on you. I've seen that a lot as well. And that happens a lot in your networks, I suspect.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, it's tough to navigate. You know, everybody's coming from their own place. Everybody's wrapped up. That's what I always try to remember, is everybody's really thinking about themselves a lot more than we think they are. So trying to navigate that, I think everybody generally has good intentions, but yeah, really just trying to appreciate their time, their effort, etc., but doing what you need to do. You shouldn't, you know, feel an obligation to live somebody else's life, which is tricky to ask for the advice and then try to set those boundaries, but it's definitely really important.
One thing I want to ask you before we move away from the mindfulness topic is if you had any resources that you would like to suggest to people who maybe might not be located near a Buddhist monk that they can learn from for a couple of weeks, which sounds like the coolest experience ever, to be clear. But yeah, kind of, do you have any advice for people maybe that are kind of looking to, I don't know, kind of do the things that you're talking about and become more self-aware and maybe just take a step back and just, yeah, do exactly what you just said.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many books out there that are honestly very helpful resources. And I feel like, especially in this kind of work and dynamic, a lot of it is self-reflective. So books apply quite nicely. There's one book called Wise Heart. I believe it's by Jack Kornfield. Which is a great sort of primer to a lot of this stuff and just kind of how to approach life from a less attached and more mindful place. And you can kind of just piece through it fairly quickly. Honestly, I read it fairly slowly because you can kind of read a little bit, digest, kind of think about it, or just blow through that part because it didn't resonate. I also use the Calm app, which is, you can just download that on your phone. And they have a bunch of either set meditations that have already been kind of created that you can go back to if you like that, or they have a new meditation every day and it's 10 minutes. So I do that in the morning, gives you a little something to think about. Yeah, I would say that book and The Call Map are really big, but honestly, you can Google it and there's so many books that are so useful and some resonate. Like most of my family members are interested in this stuff, and some books really resonate with one person and completely miss the mark on another person.
Yeah.
Another book I would say is Untethered Soul. That one's also a good one. A little bit more spiritual, I would say. A little bit out there, but it's really, really
Philosophical,
interesting.
maybe.
Yeah, exactly. It's really interesting to read, and I think has some very helpful things to think about as well, really for anybody. So there's a lot out there.
So one question I wanted to ask, which we ask a lot of our guests, is do you deal with imposter syndrome? And if
Oh
so,
yeah.
how, when is it triggered? How do you?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think I've talked about it a little bit, but I think for me, it's when I put a lot of pressure on myself to feel like I have all the answers, or I need to be changing everything, or I need to have sort of fixed it and gotten there already. Sort of like, am I really making an impact? What do I have to contribute here? And really comparing myself a lot more to other people versus thinking about what I have to contribute, I guess. And so I think, yeah, I think certainly it pops up. And for me, some of the things that I feel like have helped, I think I've said this before, but also, trying not to solve all the problems of the world at once. And like I said, really trying to focus on just one person, just really keeping it small. Anybody can do that. Anybody can impact somebody's thinking, start a conversation, and you really don't know the impact that conversations or just changing one person's life will have. And so I think really bringing that scale down has been hugely helpful for me. I think for me, the second part has been trying to spend less time about what other people are thinking. Not that, this is a one super easy to do, but less time thinking about what other people are thinking or what I should be doing or, oh, that looks like the right move at this spot, but actually trying to think about what am I excited about doing? What feels like, oh, that would be really interesting for me to explore, or I kind of want to think about that. So what actually feels like I want to be doing it versus I'm supposed to be doing it? I think that's also helped a lot. I think just being okay with feeling uncomfortable and feeling unqualified and feeling like a little bit of an imposter at times and just doing it anyway, has probably been the biggest thing that's been helpful for me, is just recognizing, yeah, that fear or that discomfort might show up anyway, but I think I'm going to probably feel more regret or more uncomfortable if I realize I didn't try to take advantage of that opportunity. And the world's not going to end if somebody says no, or if I mess that speech up, if I seem a little bit unqualified, and then I'll be, most of the time where I have messed up, that I'm much better qualified or know how to navigate the situation a lot more the next time I'm in it. So I think just being okay with being uncomfortable and doing the thing anyway, most of the time you're actually not that unqualified and you have something to contribute. And I think, we all have, this is going to sound very cheesy, but we all have our unique experiences and thoughts and interests and combination of things that nobody else has. And so even if you aren't the perfect expert on something or aren't, completely qualified for something, you have some unique perspective to share and you definitely have something to learn. So all in all, I'll probably come out of it, hopefully having learned something, if I'm willing to be a little bit uncomfortable and actually act like I have something to learn versus I am the expert and I have nothing to learn. So again, not a perfect solution, and it definitely still shows up, but I think learning to just kind of barrel through it anyway and pursue those things no matter what has been super important for me.
Now, thank you for that. It's interesting because what I heard, and it actually resonated really strongly with me, because what I heard was, and what I was reflecting on, is that the learning is in the discomfort. And also, in my own experience, I've been the most bored when I'm not feeling that imposter syndrome. So in some ways, the imposter syndrome is a signal that I'm actually in an environment where I'm learning. It kind of go together in some way. And I think that's what I was hearing out of your story. And I think what's most remarkable when I reflect back on this entire conversation is your ability to listen to yourself. I keep coming back to that. At some point, you just learned how to feel and how to feel your own energy and how to listen to it. And so that you can process and filter all this input and lean and wait on the input that resonated most strongly with you. And you were listening to the internal compass. And that's incredibly, incredibly powerful from my perspective.
Right. Absolutely. And like I said, it's not like it's been, you know, boom, I can listen to myself and it works perfectly, or every time I still do. But I think, you know, sometimes that process takes even a couple days, couple weeks, however much, to kick in. But I think once it does, it's, you know, actually trying to listen to it, and just trying to learn and be a little bit better for next time. You know, you don't have to have all the answers right away and have learned everything from one situation, but just kind of moving in the direction of a little bit more understanding. And sometimes that requires moving in the completely wrong direction and then going, oh, that was a disaster, should not have done that. Now I know a little bit more about what I need to be doing. But
well, the other thing too that I heard, the other thing that I heard too from your story, which actually resonated very strongly, was the ability to focus on not relating to other people or comparing mm-hmm. to other people, which is something I think we all struggle with as people. And it clouds how we approach ourselves all the time. And what I think I heard from you was that you've trained yourself to stop thinking about where you are relative to everybody else and more about where you are relative to yourself.
Right.
If I heard that correctly.
Yeah, and exactly. I think trying to be, I'm a super competitive person. And I think I spend a lot of time being competitive towards other people. And I'm trying to now be more competitive towards, you know, where I was yesterday. And I think that has been a hugely helpful shift. And yeah, I think really trying to just improve where you're at is really important, and trying to figure out, you know, not what is the shiniest experience or, oh, wow, look, I got this thing, now I'm all set, I'm amazing, etc. But what am I going to actually get out of this experience? How can I, you know, ask more questions, be more engaged, and be kind of less in awe of something and try to actually get into it and engage with it a little bit more, so that I can be a better person coming out of it, not so that I can just kind of parade on through and stick that on my resume and hope it goes well in the future.
Absolutely. I feel like you've just hit on so many things that I've struggled with in my own journey, but also the things that we've kind of talked about in this podcast so far. And I was looking behind me because everything you're saying reminds me of the book Mindset by Carol Dweck, I think is her last name. But yeah, that growth mindset of just mm-hmm. like, I can grow, I can learn, and just being willing and open to those experiences. And then also, like you said, I think it takes a lot of courage to know when something isn't working too, as much as it, you know, something is working, to say,
absolutely,
I had learnings from this moment, but it's actually not what I want to do long-term, and to kind of pivot from that and take the learning experience and still use it in the future, but to move away from that takes a lot of courage. So thank you. I want to wrap this up because I know we're coming up on time here, but thank you so much for sharing your story with us today and being vulnerable and just kind of getting into it with us. Is there anything that you want to share kind of with the audience if they want to find you? I don't know if you want to share social media or anything like that, or where you kind of engage and do your activism work, but I wanted to give you an opportunity if you did want to share.
I mean, I'm on LinkedIn. My Instagram is not very exciting. I also think that's private. I'm not sure anymore though. Also, you know, you can email me. My email is averywmccall@gmail.com. And yeah, I think, I guess my takeaway would be that we all have something that we're interested in, and it doesn't all have to be in fact, it's really good that it's not all the same thing, because there are so many issues in the world. And so really just kind of figure out what excites you, whether that is climate change, or whether that is making more ethical artificial intelligence, or whether that is, you know, refugee issues, whatever. I think we all have something that we're interested in. We all have some unique combination of skill sets that we can apply to that. And we're all, you know, capable of contributing. And if you have something to say, you have a right to say it. So I think really don't get daunted by the magnitude of the problems in the world, because it's very easy to do so, but just bring the scale down and recognize that we all have the ability to do something.
Absolutely. Okay, well, I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you so much, Avery, for being with us today. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you have any thoughts or feedback that you want to share with us, our Instagram is @paths2purposepod, or our email is paths2purposepod@gmail.com. And we will see you next week. Bye.